It's the Metal Show with Gully and Joe, and this week we are going to do some prong. I just felt like I had the need to roll the R on prong then. Beg to differ. It came out in 1990. I don't know the exact date because I've clicked off the page by accident, but somewhere in 1990. I like prong probably from first heard them. Snap Your Fingers, Snap Your Neck, which was a massive tune in the 90s for them, and it was always getting played in the metal clubs everywhere. And then as we've like heard the later album, which I actually do enjoy some of the later stuff quite a bit, they've always been around, and I suggested we do this one because I've got like a good few of their albums, and I've got this one on CD as well, so that's why I said, come on, let's do a bit of prong, because they are underrated at times, and they've got some fucking really good tracks. And most of the time, I tend not to skip them. So that's kind of where we got with this one. Joe, how did you get into these?
First heard Snap Your Fingers, Snap Your Neck in a club.
Mm.
I think I went and bought Clinzy a few weeks later. And really cool story. Mr. Nash, well, this involves him. There was a battle of bands in the club we used to go to. The promoter of this club, basically Tuesday night was metal night. I told you all about what going to that club did for me. Romford, back then, there was quite a few metal bands around at the time. We did have a pretty good scene.
Yeah, and I think there still is.
Even if you... Oh, there isn't now.
Well, there's more... I'll tell you what there is.
Not a metal scene, anyway.
The second-hand shops in Romford are full of fucking CDs, and that's where I got this album on CD for £1. So, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, put it this way, if I was going to go to a metal night, I wouldn't know where to go, but then again, I don't go out to shit like that anymore anyway.
Yeah.
When we were starting out, though, playing in bands, we could easily get 3 gigs a week in Romford alone.
Mm.
So you could cut your teeth quite well there. And a couple of guys that were running the club nights fancied themselves as promoters. So we got we were doing Battle of the Bands. And then on the final, we were getting, say, big names. I think we got Pissing Razors. Is it Pissing Razors or who's that other band that came out in the 90s? Kind of Pantera-y. Pissing Razors. I think Skin Lab. Was that it? Skin Lab? Do you remember them?
Yeah. I don't know why I was thinking like Downset for some reason, but yeah, Skin Lab probably is them.
Yeah, Skin Lab. We got Skin Lab to play fucking Romford.
Nice.
Yeah, so what do they do? Basically, they used to find out what they charged the night because the venues were there. We all had bands on.
Mm.
Do you remember the band Sixth?
Sixth, I've seen them recently.
Yeah, Sixth played in Romford back in the day before they were even signed. So anyway, there was a battle of the bands in this one club, and on the final, so the final's battle of the bands, they were doing the battle of the bands, and then they got prong to play. So this was the time I said about, yeah, well, I saw prong in Romford.
Mm.
And Tommy Victor, I saw him at a gig and asked him, like, do you remember that gig? And he was like, fucking hell, that place. He was talking about Chavs and what a hellhole Romford was. And I spoke to him at the gig, and then the next day Howard had him on his podcast, and he was saying, I was talking to a guy, and he brought me up in the interview. So check out the Talking Bollocks episode from fuck knows when. Where he interviews Tommy Victor, and when he talks about that, he's talking about me.
Nice.
Yeah.
So there's a bit of cross promotion. Howard, you owe us 0.1p of your Patreon.
But yeah, prong, I got into them around, you know, like cutting teeth time of getting into metal.
Mm.
Over the years, I don't know when I first heard Beg to Differ. I just bought the odd CD now and then. I would buy the new albums as they came out and bit by bit filled the collection up. I think I really took notice of Beg to Differ, though. I think I had Cleansing and the new album that was out at the time and a few other bits and bobs. And I think it was Metal Hammer, or I used to buy fucking every magazine on the shelf. So I used to get Metal Hammer, Terrorizer, I used to get Revolver. There was some shop near me that did Revolver magazine. It was from America.
Mm.
Decibel. Yeah, anything Raw. Metal. I used to just...
Used to be able to get Raw occasionally, the American one.
Yeah. There was another one as well. Metal Maniacs. They used to sell that. I used to work in Warren Street by Tottenham Court Road. And there was one of those agents did one called Metal Maniacs. But fuck knows what... it was more likely to be Metal Hammer, but... There was one of those ones where they dissect an old classic, which is pretty much what this podcast does all the time.
Oh, well, we do the odd new one, like last week.
Do the odd new one, yeah. But generally, we go with, you know, some older stuff.
Try and introduce people into stuff that's been out for a fucking time and help them to get into it, hopefully.
Yeah, I think they basically just dissected an old classic or something that was underrated. And there was an article on Beg to Differ. And it was just like, oh, well, you know, I've got a couple of their albums. I've not heard this one, so check it out sort of thing. So I think I dived into it then.
Mm.
I saw the tour. When was that? I think it was around 2010.
Mm. No. I've not seen these live. I would like to.
I've seen them about 4 times now.
Mm.
When was it? I think, 2012, they did... one of those tours where they played the album in full.
Yeah.
I saw that, and that was really good. So, I love Prong as well. Up front, out of the gate, I think Prong are probably... Tommy Victor should be a fucking multi-millionaire in my eyes, and the fact that he isn't goes to show what fucking... It says more about the metal scene than it does about him. There's... I think he's such an underrated songwriter, such an underrated guitarist. And Prong are just one of the most reliable, consistent bands. They're always doing something good and always something a little different. They're always just slightly outside the status quo. And they don't really get rewarded, I don't think. Mm. I mean, Danzig was smart enough to hire him. I mean, this is the thing. He kind of does Prong as his... That's his labour of love. His day job is the guitarist in Ministry and Danzig. But, yeah, I think he's done... Let me quickly look it up. I think he's done about 3 Danzig albums now.
Pays the bills, doesn't he? He's doing an Elvis cover.
No, more.
Do you reckon he plays on that?
He's done 4 Danzig albums now.
Well, Danzig's bringing out an Elvis cover album.
Yeah, I think that'd be good.
I hope he plays on that too.
I'm
hoping for the best, but ultimately we know it's going to be absolutely shite.
Be sincere. If you got it in here.
I'm caught in a trap. I don't know, it just doesn't work.
Because I love it so much, baby. So, hold on. 3 albums with Ministry, 4 albums with Danzig. Fucking bullshit, man. Prong should be massive. They play the fucking Underworld. I mean, that works for me.
Well, it doesn't work for fucking me. They're not coming to Liverpool anytime soon. All of a chance of them playing Romford again.
Fucking zero. Absolutely. I even got the set list from that night.
Nice.
I put it on my Facebook, yeah.
Nice. Something for the family album.
Yeah, so...
Let's talk about the cover of the album. It hasn't aged very well, has it?
I like it.
I don't know. It's a bit.
It looks like a comic book, doesn't it? But it's what's that guy that did all the albums back then? Pusshead, is that his name?
I don't know. Sounds convincing enough for the '90s. Pusshead. He's probably called Richard or something. Really.
Yeah, but you know who Pusshead is.
No.
He's done the Metallica, albums. Justice for All, Harvest of Sorrow, One, all those singles for them. SOD.
Sod. Never really got into them.
Integrity. He did a lot of fresh albums. Animosity. I'm just looking for his looks here. Ah, I'll tell you what. Oh no, he didn't do that one. I thought he did there was another one, but he just did liner notes for it. Yeah, he did all the classic fucking Metallica shit.
I just don't like it. It looks a little bit dated, but it probably looked great at the time. Do you know what I mean? I just think a little dated. It looks like the 80s, not like 1990 when it come out, but it's probably drawn the previous year anyway, technically still the 80s. So yeah, it just looks what it from its time, I think.
Here we go. I'm just looking up in that graphic artist, mainly known for his artwork for Misfits and Metallica.
Oh, well, he's done all right for himself, Annie.
Yeah.
Wonder if he's dead. Yeah. Is he dead or is he still alive? Like,
still alive, yeah.
Oh, well, there you go.
Mainly involved with the design and production of custom toys.
Oh, well, toys obviously play better than bands. But think about it, though. All them people who were doing all them really cool artworks for albums back in the day, they probably had to find something
more
else.
Money. Trust me, you're making more money if you designed Motorhead's logo than what you did if you wrote Ace of Spades.
Or if you designed the latest He-Man action figure by the sounds of it as well.
Yeah. So. The Misfits t-shirt, I mean, fuck. People, you can get a Misfits t-shirt in Topshop.
And in Primark, or Primarni, as it's known.
Probably,
in the UK.
Yeah.
You get everything in there. I've got Slayer t-shirts in
there. In the UK?
Yeah. I don't know if is Primark everywhere?
Yeah.
Oh, God help us all. On to the first track. Seems like a good a time as any to move away from shops that don't fucking give us any money anyway. For Dear Life, it's thrashy kind of song. It's a bit short. You do lose the bass a little at times, though. I like the breakdown in the middle. It's got a nice little solo and a good little speed up, and the drumming is good and punchy and effective. The lead guitar sound naff. That's it sounds like it's Motley Crue cock rock solo sounding when the solos themselves aren't really like that. But all in all, a good little opener, and I didn't mind it.
Yeah, this is a staple prong song now. I think the last time I saw them, they opened with this. It's got a good punchy riff kicking it in, good drums. I'm just trying to think of what I think of it, really. I don't know if I like it or not. It's for Dear Life. You're not going to go to a prong gig and not hear this song. You know, it's just a staple of theirs now. But yeah, it sets the tone for the album. It sets the tone for a live show, because obviously when they open with it, it's the, you know, everyone knows it. It's got a I think the first album was a bit more fresh, more upfront, sort of fresh metal, while it's what's what they called crossover at the time, isn't it? So this is 1990. When was the first album? 88. So fresh was sort of well and truly established by then. But Prongo from New York.
And, yeah, little fuck.
They kind of mixed the hardcore elements as well. You had a lot of bands. There was the hardcore scene, and then you had the metal bands, and then you had the people that were mixing the two. I think they started off with that, but this album, they're a lot more developed. They kind of got their own individual thing going on. And they were always, they always had, the cool thing about prong, and it's kind of their, not a weakness, because it's not something detrimental to them. It's detrimental to, I think, the public. They've always kind of just seeped in between. So say, they're the cement in between the bricks, I find prong. They just kind of slip in the middle, and everyone kind of likes them, but not everyone kind of jumped on board with them as they did with other bands.
Well, this was described as thrash metal before groove metal.
Yeah, yeah, we'll get to, well, one particular song. Well, when we get to the title track, really, I think we'll really talk about that then. But they kind of had like a post-punk influence as well. And then like when industrial music was, they never full-on went full-on industrial, but they always flirted with it, didn't they? But that comes out a bit more in Cleansing, I suppose.
Mm.
But
So Steady Decline. The little riff that opens with sounds like an Eddie Van Halen kind of riff. And then like the main riff kicks in and it's a fist pumper in it. It's going to be a shouty, shouty album with the names of the songs going to be shouted as much as fucking possible because that's what it is. And it's got the mantra thing going on too. It sounds like the 80s is still kind of holding on. And it's not a bad thing with this track. Screaming guitar. And then there's a bit of a dual solo thing. So obviously he's recorded the two solos on two different sides. And then you've got your, okay, we're still getting the talky bits on the end of songs. But like this song is a lot better for me, Steady Decline, than the previous one. So yeah, it's getting better as we go along. And I didn't mind this track. I do get tired of the repeating of the fucking name of the song as shouty backing. But it works for this one, so I'm letting it off. It's a good track.
Yeah, that's your hardcore influence there, the chanting thing.
Biohazard and all that.
Yeah. You got... I don't know where it started, really. I think Agnostic Front is your first sort of frame of reference. Mm. Plus, before he started Prong, he was a sound engineer at CBGB, so he was probably seeing loads of hardcore shows. Mm. And it's a live element. I mean, you put it in the... You put that in the song, it works live because the crowd
shout along.
Shout along with it, yeah. Mm. So it just works for your live show.
Yeah.
In a competitive environment like that, you've got to get the audience on your side. So it is a really good, it's a simple but useful tool
I don't think it translates well to recordings. I think it is more of a live thing.
I'd have to say
that you've kind of put me onto that point of view there, and I totally get it, and I think that's where it should stay. Keep it live, maybe, but yeah,
it does work live though. Yeah. Given that, and that's one thing with this album I will say, because you mentioned the production. Again, that's the thing with Prong. They never found that. They had a lot of lineup changes over the years, as you know. And not knocking anyone that's ever been in Prong. I mean, people have done pretty well at being in Prong. Obviously, like Paul Raven was in there for a little while. Fucking Monty Connor. Not Monty Connor. Monty Pittman.
Oh, yeah.
Monty Connor's.
Madonna's guitarist.
Yeah, like went on to play in Madonna.
Oh, yeah.
Fuck's sake. But he just... They never quite got that class, that... Do you remember, like, with Rust in Peace? Mm. Rust in Peace, just everything just came together, didn't it? Dave Mustaine found that perfect lineup with the perfect producer. You know, that is one thing with Prong. They just never quite got that. The stars just never quite aligned, did they?
No.
To put out that album that just... They always, you know, they got on Headbangers Ball and they got the thing, but they never just got through that. That fucking...
They just never
got to that next level.
They never broke the hymen.
Yeah. It kind of... They smashed the window and chipped and shattered it a bunch of times, but they never broke through it.
No. I'd have to agree. They were... I don't know what, why or where or how or why it didn't happen, but it did.
Yeah.
With them.
But Cole's song, great little... again, with Prong, the what's... It's the hidden details. It's the stuff that goes on in the background that jumps out the Prong with me. And so you've got that kind of pressure. And then it just goes into that. That's the thing with Prong. It's that little one they throw in as the curveball.
Mm.
That's the interesting bit. That's the... They kind of dangled a carrot with like a mainstream sort of riff and then just hit you with that one.
Mm.
And you're just going like, what is he even playing there? It just sounds weird.
Mm.
And
I've noticed that.
Yeah. And it's just, they just mix everything. It's just great, you know, because it's got that punk grittiness and they've still got metal, but they've, you know, in 1990, I bet things were getting a bit sterile at this point as well. And not only that, when did thrash metal kind of start going on its decline? Because I suppose 1990, I suppose death metal was established by then.
Mid-90s.
Yeah, it kind of metal was going for a fucking weird period now anyway.
Mm.
And Prong, I think, were, they came just at the right time, because although this might not be the biggest album ever, it's certainly an important album in terms of metal's evolution, you know, which we can get into as the songs go on.
Yeah.
But yeah, first album sort of, The Dear Life sort of sets the tone, and Steady Decline for me kind of just sets the playing field a little bit, sets the table. Sort of, it's just another layer of just establishing what's to come for the rest of the album.
Yeah, agreed. Beg to differ. The opening riff is good. This song is more of a precursor to what's to come from them in the future and in future albums. It's got the keys to what they evolve into. I like the main riff. The singing does mature, and it's a lot less screamy. He gets a lot better than he is on this album. He's not his best. I love the chorus riff, and it is the best song on the album so far. And the drumming is fucking, the drumming's great. Beg, differ. And then you got your nice little wanky solo, and then you've got your, like, you know, a Machine Head type harmonic. You get that in it as well. And it ended up on Machine Head Songs Forever and a Day.
Fucking right. Yeah, this is another thing I was going to get into. Yeah. Carry on.
Yeah, so it's a good little track, to be fair, and this points more to the to how they would mature in the future. Vocally, they will, but musically, they have on this song, is the best analogy I could use. But a good track.
Yeah, again, I think that's the real charm of this album. It's like they've not got to where they're going to yet, and metal hasn't. So many classics albums that are going to come out, say sort of like 94, like a few years down the line, you can trace them all back to this album. And this is why this album is so important and it's considered a classic today. And it is just that, like I said, that fucking Machine Head took that.
And kept it for life ever and never give it back.
Kept it forever. And, you know, I think Prong would have had, you know, again, Biohazard took the metal thing with, you know, they say, bands are mixing metal with hardcore. Well, Biohazard just took that one step further and added in hip-hop.
Mm.
But they had the whole chant, crowd chanting thing. But I think they took a lot of Prong's tone, like the sort of crunch in their riffs as well.
Mm.
And obviously the groove as well. Biohazard had a lot of groove in their sounds. But yeah, this song as well, again, another, I would say the first one set the tone. This thing is like, yeah, the foreplay is over now. It's time to fuck. And this is the fuck song. I've took off and I don't know where I'm going to land with that one.
Just let yourself crash. Just crash and burn.
But yeah, this again, fantastic song when played live. You know, you go to a gig, everyone's headbanging, but you watch the audience with this one and that audience just move to this. Mm. It's fucking cold. It's, again, these songs are a lot better live. I just watched a video for this as well before we were setting up, and it's fucking, it's terrible.
I'm not surprised from the time.
But again, you know, like when you just see a film, you might look at a film now and go, oh, well, this is a bit dated, and I can kind of tell that that's a model, and you know, but your brain kind of just fills in the blanks. It's like, yeah, I know what it's trying to make me see, though.
So watch Jason and the Argonauts. It'll be ruined for you.
But again, if they remake... All right, let's take Jason and the Argonauts, for example, then. Prime example. In fact, even better, Clash of the Titans.
Yeah, Clash of the Titans. Or Krull.
You would watch... I've never seen Krull.
Oh, but don't. It's not...
I can't believe you just said that, because I saw that...
Spinny Blade.
I was in HMV a week or two ago, and I saw some special edition. I was thinking, what the fuck is that? Right.
It's a guy with a spinny blade and a big blob of shite.
Oh, right. Or Phantasm.
Phantasm, like, yeah. It's just goldfish bowl painted.
As bad as that is, you kind of just, your mind fills in the blanks.
Ugh.
But if they remade it, it'd be shit, because it'd just be some CGI... crap.
Well, and I expect that in the next couple of years, because Hollywood's got no decent ideas, have they? So we'll be getting fucking rebirths of all this shit.
They probably will, yeah. But yeah, like Clash of the Titans, for example, when they remade it with all the modern effects, it just wasn't there, was it? The charm wasn't there.
No.
So that's kind of like what this is with Prong. It's kind of a, say you've got, say Terminator 2 or Terminator 3 even, but Terminator 3 had the better effects, but this is Terminator 1. This is like the precursor.
Yeah.
You kind of, there's hints here of what's to come.
Yeah.
And in a way, where the, it's not fully fleshed out yet, it kind of, the charm's there. So it's all the better for it.
Mm.
You know what I mean? It's like watching an old episode of Doctor Who. As terrible as it looks now.
You remember why you liked it.
Yeah, but the writing and the, everything, you can see they were doing the best of what they had. Mm. And
an egg box.
That's kind of what applies here.
And a bit of jelly for the inside of a Dalek.
And this is, you know, kind of ropey production with a comic book front cover, but if they re-recorded it, everyone would be going...
Yeah, I agree. Lost and Found. I like the opening riff. It's a catchy licks. You can hear the bass. Welcome to the album. We missed you. Shouty song title. I realised as soon as I put it on, when I first started listening to it, that it would continue all the way through this shouty mantra stuff. And it's getting on me tits a little. Drums are spot on. And this is what really sounds out for me, is the drumming is fucking amazing at times. He's really bridging the gaps. And he's not overdoing it, but... It's precise and it's there's a bit of flair as well. Wobbly solo, which kind of sounds really quiet in the mix. I do like the track though. It's got punishing drums. And I imagine if this was recorded again, because you just said it, and with this one, if this was recorded today, it would sound a lot better and it would be great to see live. So Lost and Found, we're doing all right. It's not amazing at times, the shouty bits especially, but I think I'd have to see it live to probably get the better version, maybe.
Yeah, you're right. But, I mean, you said about the 90s. This sounds like a 90s song to me.
Mm.
It's got that funky... But I'll tell you what, I can put you onto an album called Unleashed in the West. Mm. It's live in Berlin. And it's a live album, but it's just them. They've recorded it in a studio, so it's not like a concert.
Mm.
And it's 17 tracks, all classics, re-recorded live there and then.
Mm.
And Lost and Found's on there.
Ooh.
I'm just looking at
link,
the thing.
Link the fuck to me, and I won't pirate it, honest.
Yeah, but check it. I think it was only available as an official bootleg. I think they only sold it at the gigs. But no, that's a really good album. And yeah, rather than recording the whole album, it's just 3-4 songs off a bunch of albums.
Nice.
But they've got that modern, you know...
Modern production values, which we all know and love.
Yeah. And also, when you talk about drummers, again, underrated. Because it's not all like Gene Hoglan, you know, people think, oh, you know... The Prong's nothing to write home about, but no, really demanding drumming.
Yes, it's very good drumming. One thing I would say, just to ask you a question then, have you noticed, or is it something that you've heard in the mix? Because I'm more about it, like, obviously, but do you think the drums are a little loud at times?
They've got that fucking...
they're really intense on the low and the high end.
A lot of albums around that time, they kind of had that snare sound, though, didn't
they? Yeah. It sounds more like a punch sound on a fucking computer game of the day. Like a fucking Golden Axe or fucking... what's that other one? Double Dragon. Psh! It sounds like that. It sounds like a psh instead of an actual snare.
Yeah, I noticed it, but it doesn't really bother me either. So it kind of just... What's the word? It kind of just sort of highlights that particular beat that they want to keep... put across, but it doesn't really... Yeah, I'm fine with it.
I don't mind it. Any more for Lost and Found?
Not really. It's got... The sound sort of opens up a bit now because you had that sort of like thrash up front to begin with. Steady Decline was kind of like, you know, sort of like a galloping number. Beg to Differ was nice and groovy, kind of slow. This one's kind of like mid-paced and funky.
Mm.
And That's what I was just about to say. The drummer, the latest drummer of Prompt that's just left them, is now the drummer in Lamb of God.
It's a truck stop where you go and have your dinner before you go somewhere good. It's like when you go on holiday and you're in a camper van, you need to go for a piss and go and get ciggies or whatever. That's what Prong is.
Yeah. I'm not really bothered about Lost and Found, though. I mean, if it's in the live set, all well and good. It's not a favourite of mine, though. I've got to admit. But it's a good song. It's all right.
Your Fear is a change up with a mellow, sinister intro. It's like cascading through a hallway in a horror film. I like the riff when he sings. It's more of a shouty type thing than the singing, really. His voice has so much improved over the years, though, and this song is testament to that. I just couldn't really get into it, though. It does not inform me. It's like one of the nice, the longer songs on the album, but like it's got a nice little solo, and the riff around 3:30 is fucking spot on, but I don't know, it's too late in the day for it to pull it back for me with this song, and I'd leave it rather than take it.
Now, I'd go to say this is one of my favourites on the album.
Oh.
I think this is one of the songs as well that really showcases what Prong were capable of. I think it's got a really cool, dark atmosphere. You mentioned Machine Head earlier. This sounds like something off of Burn My Eyes. It's one of the slower songs that we'd do. And that sort of melody he plays towards the end of the song. Let me just skip ahead.
Like Death when Church. The song Death Church Rising, like that kind of thing.
Yeah, one of them slow sort of doomy songs at the end. But yeah, it's around a four-minute mark. Fucking amazing. I don't want to say a solo because it's a melody, but it's just that da 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 da. It's fucking. It's really sinister and dark, and I love it. That kind of brings in what would come later with the sort of industrials sort of sound, because with a band like Fear Factory, where they kind of had that dark dystopian. You know, you see power plants and the end of the world.
They actually did sound more like a computer game, their drums. To be fair, fact, it probably was a fucking computer, which everyone thought it was.
I'm thinking, you know, like just that sort of thing that Killing Joke, I'm talking about atmosphere now, Killing Joke, Ministry. Boy God. Yeah, a bit of Ministry.
Psalm 69, particularly that track.
You know, yeah, but I'm talking about that sort of dark, future atmosphere sort of thing. A really underrated band, actually. I'd love to review one of their albums, one album in particular anyway. A band from England called Amoebix.
I've never heard of them, so I'd be interested to do something I've never heard of.
Yeah, check out... Oh, fuck, I've got the CD somewhere. Started off as like a sort of like a punk band, like a crust punk band, sort of in the vein of Discharge. And then they kind of introduced like an industrial sort of post-punky element to their sound. And do you know what? Jason Newsted, I think, said like this particular album, I think, was like one of his favourite albums. Mm. And for all the thing that Voivod get, like, check out a band called Amoebix. Mm. We'll have to, we'll extend on that another time.
We'll do,
yeah,
we do.
This song kind of reminds me of that kind of vibe.
Mm.
Of what's going on. That's another thing that they dip into. But no, I really like this song. This is a song that really stood out to me when I've been listening over the last week or so. It's something that they would extend on later on, that sort of dark sound.
Mm.
And yeah, just from a fucking punk band from New York to suddenly start writing songs like this, it just goes to show like how quick the band were evolving.
Agreed with that one. Take It In Hand, fading riff, and then the drums are going mental. Nice little riff after the fading's pretty much fucked off. Then it kicks in with a big flurry of drums. The drumming's just spot on this one. I like the tempo. And you can hear the bass again. It's come back for a little bit. It's matching with the drums, and there's a little cheeky fills that are matching the beat to the drums, and it shows good chemistry. And for me, excuse me, this song is a big leap from the last one, so I like this one. And then there's a nice little slow down bit. The solo near the end is good, and but the lead guitar's a little bit too low in the mix again, and it kind of... you kind of lose the solos a little bit, and it's far too quiet. Maybe that was purposeful, I'm not sure, but the drums is the only consistent loud instrument that you'll always hear. You won't hear the bass sometimes you won't hear the guitars, and you'll hear the drums all the time. But yeah, it's not a bad song, it is what it is. It's better than the last one, so I that's all I can ask for. As long as there's improvements and doesn't leave the sour taste in my mouth, I'm happy to move upwards.
Yeah, it kind of just brings us back to sort of For Dear Life, the first two songs, really. This is like, right, we've had a fuck around. We've gone a bit doomy and a bit proggy. Now we're going to go back to the mosh pit and throwing each other around again. And I think that sums it up perfectly. This is a good mosh pit song. Nice little sort of Sabbath-y riff, really. In the middle, though, sort of comes out of nowhere. Kind of slows right down, doesn't it?
Yeah, the slow downy bit.
But, no, I bet the take it in hand was starting to piss you off.
Yes, it is. And I don't mind it when it's in moderation. It doesn't have to be every other fucking song, for fuck's sake. You don't need to do it, so don't do it.
They don't do it as much as they went on, either. I think they're just still stuck in the...
We're stuck in the 80s.
No, I think they're stuck in the mode of this needs to go across live. So I think they're still thinking, right, we're going to be in a packed, sweaty club. We need to get the audience going. So that was probably the mode they were in at the time.
Yeah.
Because they wouldn't get sort of playing really lots of big venues.
I could see that.
Cleansing or something like that. So I think they've still got that sort of punk mentality still with this album. But next up, we've got an instrumental.
Oh, God. Little riff. Drums alone in the album, so it's like, so far, it's drummers one, everybody else, nil. It's an instrumental, so what are you doing on an album? It's not a bad track, but it should be a B-side. Get off.
I don't mind this instrumental, actually.
I don't think, especially with... If you take it into context of the other songs on here, it's unexpected. Yes, okay, I give it that. Woo, something different, but it doesn't work for me in the context of everything that's come before it.
Yeah, I mean, a good one is fucking, especially on a debut album. I think a really good instrumental on a debut album really kind of shows you flexing your muscles, kind of thing.
It's normally fucking guitarists who always want that, though. It's not bassists. It's always guitarist. Oh, I've got this tune. I just want to play this at the end of the song. It'll just be my little bit. And like nearly every person I've jammed with, like guitarist-wise, they've always wanted to do something like this. This is never a bassist. This is never a singer, obviously. And it's never the fucking drummer. It's always the little fucking wanky guitarist. It's a wanky guitarist song and I'm not having it. Get off. Go on. Fuck off.
The drums on this album.
Intermenstrual DSB. It's about, like, I don't know. It's about periods. I don't know. What? Why is it called that? I don't know.
Let's just move on.
Yeah. Agreed.
It's gone nowhere.
Right to nothing. Honestly, the internet's coming for us one of these days. I like the riff, and then he sings it, and he ruins it. It sounds really fucking dated. I'd like to see it live because I don't like the way he sings it on here. I really like the music. The drums are spot on, but fucking hell. The singing on this just fucking ruins it for me. The drums couldn't even save it, and the good musicianship behind it is fucking great, but I bet you he doesn't sing it like this now if they play it live. I bet you fucking...
Probably
I don't know.
Not, no.
I bet you my nasal inhaler, which is helping my nose stay unblocked at this particular time, that there's no fucking way he sings it like this because it sounds terrible.
I can't the vocals haven't really stuck out for me for any reason, to be honest.
It sounds like that. Sounds like a cat getting strangled. He can't sing like that. His voice isn't made to sing like that, and I don't know why he's trying.
I mean, I don't think Tommy Victor's going to go down in history as like the best vocalist of all time. He kind of does enough to carry out the song. But yeah, he has got better with age, I think. I think
definitely.
Songs.
It's whiny and moany, and it just put me off it straight away. It was just like, it's fucking hell. It was like, when you've gone out and you've got really fucking hammered and you come home to your missus and she's got that tone of voice, that's what it's like. And you're hungover and you're like, fuck off. That's what I was like with this song. I just couldn't get it.
This is one of those songs for me. We're getting to the sort of end of the album. Not going so far as to say it's filler, but it's kind of just, it's ticking things along nicely at this point. No more, no less.
That's fair.
I suppose that is.
And is the next song a prime cut? Prime cut. Nice little drum intro. I like the riff and the bass came back too. Welcome back. I'm half expecting before Victor sings, Dave Mustaine to actually fucking sing on this one, because it sounds a very Megadeth song, man. I don't mind the singing on this one. I have to say, it is a bit repetitive, and yes, the cut is very tough. It's tough. I don't mind it, though, even though it's a little dated, I suppose. I like the breakdown around 2 minutes 50, and the cut is still very tough. Is he making a leather jacket? Is he trying to cut a carpet? What's he using? Is his scissors blunt? These are all questions that come into my mind. I imagine he was making a biker jacket, and that's why the cut is very tough. That's what comes into my head anyway, but yeah, it's a good track.
This is actually the one I was tempted to skip. Again, listening to it every opportunity, trying to listen to it a couple of times a day, this was the one I was like, yeah, I get it.
Just imagine Megadave. Get rid of the singer. Throw in Megadave. This is Megadeth.
I often entertain the thought: what if Tommy Victor and Dave Mustaine ever worked together? What would come up there? I don't think Tommy Victor would part with Dave. Shit, though.
I don't reckon he.
Mind you, he puts up with Danzig, so
yeah. If he can put up with fucking Danzig, who tries to punch people for taking photographs on fucking on public property, then yeah, I think he can cope with Dave Mustaine.
Are you talking about that time when he had the fight and it was like, oh, look, this guy beats up Danzig?
Yeah, I've seen the one backstage where he gets knocked out by the fat bloke.
Yeah, that was a setup. They purposely fucking wound him up to provoke him. And they basically just went, why don't we get him to the thing, get him, wind him up, and then you just fucking knock him out. That video was uploaded on a band's website.
Mm-hmm.
They were one of the bands that were supporting that night at that particular show.
Mm.
This is how we've got to now. Because do you remember that band? I can't remember what they were called. It doesn't matter what they were called.
Fuck them.
But they actually faked the fucking singer's kidnapping.
Oh, yeah, this I band, remember
like,
that
the singer
shit.
Went missing. And then before the album came out, he's back, we found him. And it's like, this is where we are now. Bands have to fucking come up with something to get themselves in the news.
Or that guy.
But yeah, that thing.
Or that guy who created
that thing
the website.
That the guy cooked.
The guy who created the fucking, he used to tour. He made a whole tour from something he made up in his head. He made up fake reviews. He made up fake fucking videos and the lot. And about 4 people was turning up to his gigs. He'd come over here and done a few gigs in the UK. It was like last year or something. And this is, and obviously he didn't get anywhere. He had empty gigs and the promoters were all, okay, we paid him money and he's just fucking blagged our heads. But that's the type of shit you got to deal with now, I suppose.
Yeah, but looking, I'll try and find you something if you're interested. But that fucking video was a setup.
Mm.
They had a plan. And they're like, yeah, get him fucking wound up.
One hell of a fucking punch, though.
Well, yeah. Again, as well, it's like, it's just like, what, have you never fucking been hit before? You know, like, none of us have fucking not had a fight and not fucking got beat up. Come on.
Last time I watched it, I did think,
Tyson fucking Fury, you know? Like, so, yeah. I'm just saying, thank fuck there wasn't phones around when I was growing up. you don't know how long that video was. And you just got that little bit, and again, it's like, yeah, fucking
famous for 5 minutes.
You're the guy that fucking sucker punched Danzig. Good for you, but Danzig's gonna be a legend at the end of the day.
Oh yeah,
you're not. So. But
Prime Cut is done.
Prime Cut, I'm not bothered about Prime Cut.
Okay, just the same. I'm not doing the live track. Don't want to do that at the end. Sorry.
You do.
No. I'll listen to it, but I'll let you talk about it because I don't like it.
Because it's not a bonus track.
Yeah.
It's an actual.
So, nice little riff, and then the nice little solo riff. The good musicians, and it there's something off about the lead, and for me, I feel this is the good way to finish the album, because they've got hints of the future about the band and where they're becoming. It's less Biohazard shouty shit, which I'm totally good with, and as they progress, the sound quality does get better. It's not perfect with them. They have had albums later on where it's like, okay, it's a little bit iffy, but the singing steps up a lot more. The guitarists sound fucking, at times they sound really tinny and cock rock and fucking LA sounding fucking 80s solos, and musically the solos are good, but they sound tinny and fucking shite. But I do like the fast riff at the end, and for me this is probably the perfect closer on the album. This is where it should have stopped.
I'm just looking into it. Yeah, we can stop this if you want. I always thought it was a
no, it's a bonus, it isn't it?
Yeah, I thought it was always no. But in my defence, it was on the original CD, but it's not on the vinyl.
It's on the CD I've got, and it's also on Spotify. So
yeah,
it's kind of wormed its way in. But I feel as this is probably the best way to end it. For me anyway, but you're more than welcome to talk about the live one. I didn't listen to it because, you know me and live tracks, I don't want to mark it down because of a live track. That's all I would say. It would temper my review, and it would knock a point or two off if it was really bad. So I wouldn't want to do that. So I tend to stay away from shit like that on albums if I can. It's good to have them, don't get me wrong. It's nice, it's extra music, but I want to hear stuff that's in the studio on a studio album. I don't know if that's me being just like...
Yeah, no, I'm just looking at reading something. I'm just... I didn't know. You never stop learning. There you go.
Yes, life is a learning process.
I just thought this was like a track that they just went, fuck it. Because it weren't that... it's not actually that unheard of. Sometimes, you know, a band like runs out of budget or something like that, or they just never got around to recording the song properly, but they got a really good live version, and they've gone, fuck it, put the live version on the album.
Or the contractor to do a certain amount of songs on a fucking album, maybe. I don't know. Who knows?
Yeah. But this wasn't on the vinyl. So I always kind of thought of it as, yeah, it's a live track, but it's still part of the album. Because they even did it live when I saw them. When they did this album in full, they even did that one.
Well, you can talk about the live one. I didn't really listen to it because of that. Because when I was investigating it, it was on the CD, and I was like, "Oh fuck off!" I just skipped it off, and Spotify as well when I was listening before, so I've just kind of skipped it.
Yeah,
really.
The fact that Spotify included it. Yeah,
yeah.
This is a good mid-paced track, like you say. Yeah, it is a good set closer, really. Mm. It kind of finishes with a whimper rather than a bang. It goes a bit chaotic at the end. The drummer kind of does his little victory lap where he uses up the last of his energy. They kind of speed up a little bit at the end, but yeah, it's the highlights of the album are still sort of at the beginning. Not offensive in any way. I think it's certainly a lot better than Prime Cut.
Mm.
So yeah, good little closer, and that's about it for me on this as far as this particular track.
Well, you run through the live track then, and I'll shut up.
Third from the Sun, I didn't realise, was actually a cover by a band called Chrome.
Yes.
And they released it as a single in between albums.
So they've just stuck it on there.
And they've stuck a live version of the track on the end of the album. But it's a good song. I think it's a good song anyway. And I think this is a good live rendition of it. Not that I've got a studio rendition to compare it to. But no, good fucking riff. Kind of like a... You know, like that sort of opening bass line on Orion? And yeah, like it kind of opens like that.
Like a working your way up. It's like when you it's when you're with a woman. You don't just go straight for the vagina. You tend to play with the titties first, and that's kind of a riff. It's playing with the titties.
I was more talking about just the sound.
No, but I'm talking about the feelings.
I can tell what's on your brain.
Well, it's always on my brain.
But no, it kind of opens with a thing, but then it goes into like this sort of grungy riff. It goes like... And then... But it's got a really good chorus. It's just like, everything's the same. Nothing has changed. And then... it's a really good song. I really like it. I didn't realise that they'd put it out on an EP beforehand. I'll probably have to have a look on that.
It's probably like £1,000 for it
it's
fucking
about
Amazon.
£500 Yeah.
Special limited edition, two copy knobhead.
But I've always liked the track. Again, it was good seeing it live on that one time when they did the album in full. I've always thought of it as the closer. So I've had the album for so long. I've always recognised it as a track on the album. And I think it gives another little element to the band's sound as well. When I talk about that New York sound as well, I can't believe I haven't brought up fucking Typo Negative. The whole gothic thing, but when you listen to the earlier albums, they're just New York.
New York! Know? I feel like having a vest on.
And a handkerchief. They got that whole chanting along thing. Life of Agony had it a lot as well in the first albums.
And you got to do that stomp dance where you look like your hands are on strings and you're wobbling your hands in the stomp dance for that type of music.
We'll have to do that. We'll have to do the first Life of Agony album at some point. Well, anything by Life of Agony, really, but especially those first three.
They've definitely changed over the years, and so has the singer.
He was a caterpillar at that point, but now he's a butterfly.
Ooh, lovely.
I met him, her. It was him at the time.
Hushy.
At the time, he was Keith. I met Keith.
You met Keith.
I've not met Nina. Is it Nina?
Yeah, it's Nina.
We're in dodgy territory now.
I know. We're moving on. Do you want to give your rating for this album then? Because I've gone first a lot of times and I want to go last.
It's an important album. It was a precursor for a lot of stuff. So it is an important album. But that's not to say people didn't take what went on in this album and improve. They built on it, but they also improved on it. Better stuff. It was a precursor for stuff to come along later, but that stuff was better. And it also prompted better stuff as well. So this album seems to be seen as a classic by Prong, but it's not. It's a breakthrough album by Prong. The better stuff came a lot longer. Much better stuff came along afterwards. So by today's standards, I'd give this a good 7 out of 10. It's a good, solid album. And it gives you an idea of what's to come, but much, much better things did come along later.
I'm going to take it down a notch to 6. Some of the songs are fucking terrible, but it does, like you said, this contains the keys to the future, and it's contained within these tracks, and the future is bright. So for that alone, it's worth 6, and I enjoyed it, and there's some good tracks on there. It is a little bit repetitive, and yes, it's a little bit cheesy, and thank fuck they changed the way they have their guitars not sounding like Motley Crue, but other than that, it's a good little solid album, a nice solid 6. It's a couple of the songs really got on me tits, and that's why I'd probably be closer to 7. And if we'd have to get rid of the instrumental for me, there's no place for them now. Go away, be off with you. But other than that, I enjoyed it. I don't know what we're going to do next. We haven't quite worked that one out yet. This will probably come out earlier than the last show because I'm away this weekend. So But have you got anything to plug? Anything new coming out? Any magazines? Any, I don't know, any centerfolds of Playboy or Playgirl, is it?
Not at the moment, no. But a centerfold is coming.
It's coming. Whee. So, if you want to find us, you go at Rock Show Online on Twitter, The Rock Show Online on Facebook. On Twitter, I will sell stuff, consoles and the likes. If you're in Europe, you like old consoles and shit like that, buy my shit. It pays for my beer, drugs and hookers. If you enjoyed the show, share the show. Don't be a cunt. Thanks very much. See you later.
He's just joking, folks. He can't afford hookers.
No. Not on a fucking podcaster's salary, which is zero. See ya.
See ya.